From the Tie Cats Audio Network, this is Tie Cats Today with Steve Milton.
It's Wednesday, April 17th. This is Tie Cats Today, and I'm Steve Milton. Although we're generally going to have a wide variety of guests and friends drop by to talk Tie Cats and football, I just wanted to take this one out for a solo spin by myself. Rookies report to McMaster 3 weeks from tomorrow, and veterans arrive for main camp 3 days later, so I've been spending a lot of time anticipating the coming Tiger Cat season. Now, you definitely don't want to climb inside this brain, so over the next few minutes, I'll give you the Coles Note highlights. They'll be revisited and reanalyzed as time moves on, and the town team in its 10th season at the Donut Box begins to take shape. But first, the elephant in the room. Although they've been consistent playoff contenders and reached two Grey Cups in the last four seasons, the Tie Cats are coming off two straight 8-10 seasons and consecutive losses in the first postseason round. And last year, in seven cracks at it, they failed to beat either of the teams who finished ahead of them in the East. Is that good enough? Not nearly. So a lot to be proven here. To themselves, to the new coach, to their Eastern rivals, and I would say most of all, to the hometown fans who, when they breathe, they exhale black and gold. Last year, this loyal group saw just three victories at Tim Hortons Field, which used to be football's Sargasso Sea, where visiting ships came to run out of wind and perish in the seaweed. Now, injuries, particularly a quarterback and receiver, had a profound impact on that, but those are always part of the game. And Bo Levi Mitchell would be, and has been, to his credit, the first to tell you that even when he wasn't hurt, he didn't execute well enough. But his arm is still strong, or at least it is in my opinion, and let's not forget that he's the winningest pivot of all time and is already guaranteed a spot in the Hall of Fame. As professional as they come, I anticipate that Bo will be as motivated as he's ever been, perhaps even more so, and he's always been very highly driven. It's not news that from the opening snap at training camp, no player will be watched more closely than Bo Levi Mitchell will be. But from the looks of the off-season signings, re-signings, and retentions, Bo Levi will probably have lots to work with. General manager Ed Hervey and his personnel department didn't do a complete rebuild, but they did reconfigure some key areas where they thought they were short. And that was loudly obvious by their off-season signings. Premier coverage back Jamal Peters, starting Canadian linebacker Jordan Williams, a million receivers, Canadian safeties, taller corners, and they bit the bullet and bit some salary cap to ensure that they got all-world Tim White back. They went out and got not only sack generators on the defensive line, one end to the other, but also high motors. This team needs to make life far more uncomfortable on opposing quarterbacks with pressures and takedowns, and do it as often as they can with just the front four to remove some of the pressure on the pass coverage guys. And they also signed enough good Canadian receivers, adding the likes of Luther Hakunuvanu and Brendan O'Leary Orange to increasingly important Keandre Smith and vastly underrated local boy Tyler Tarnowski. So it's apparent that their ratio division will probably include two Canadian receivers. Ergo, they can often start a front four of all American players, guys like Brandon Barlow and Dwayne Hendricks. They free agency to wade right underneath the nose of the Argonauts, along with their 16 total sacks. And they'll still have ratio flexibility there with the likes of Anthony Federico and Mo Diallo to rotate Canadians through the defensive trenches. And speaking of receivers, which we just were, they've got such a plethora coming in, they'll need their own locker room. Most dramatically, they've clearly aimed high, as in friendly giant high. Look up, look way up. My last count had, and this is stunning, nine receivers coming into camp who soar 6'4" or taller, three of them 6'6" or beyond. That's a lot of catching radius. Now, generally accepted accounting principles say CFL defenses are usually well ahead of offense early in the year. But it seems to me this might be an exception for the Tie Cats this spring. I'm thinking that Bo Levi's offense, with sophomore Wunderkid Taylor Powell right behind him, has to start by hitting the ground running. They know who can start and where, barring some serendipitous surprises. Scott Milanovich has a half-season familiarity with his quarterbacks, his running backs, half his receivers, and almost all of his line. And they're familiar with his systems and nomenclature. The defense is working in a lot of good, but new to the team players, so the offense might have to be the driver in the early going. I might go so far as to say they might have to carry the team through the first couple of games. On specials, they'll have to unearth a replacement for returner Tyreek McAllister, who's still in the NFL, but finding and nurturing run back guys has never been a Ticat problem. And they'll start with the knowledge that with Mark Leggio's placements and Kari Vedvik's punting, their kicking game is more reliable than it was early last year when both, repeat, both their kickers left the team for personal reasons. Every year is a new one. And in the CFL, with its vast free agency classes, teams, even those that win the Grey Cup, can never return the same roster year to year. The Ticats are certainly no exception to that. From the first drill of training camp, one thing I'll be paying attention to is who, beyond the quarterbacks, emerges as the on-field leader. Some players, like center David Beard, do it quietly by their actions and ethics. Others are more vocal. I'm guessing that defensive tackle Casey Sales, among others, might be among the leaders up front. And perhaps, a bit surprisingly, because he's still early in his career, that safety Stavros Katsantonis will be a take-charge guy in the secondary. But I don't get to choose that. And fans don't get to choose that either. The players as a collective choose that. As a team changes and evolves, so does leadership. On the field, which many of us can see, but also off it, which most of us can't. Which brings me to one final observation. I'm elated that I'll still see the great Simone Lawrence every day as he's decided to join Hamilton Sports Group. But it's going to feel a trifle bizarre next month, not hearing him amplify training camp drills with his enthusiasm and ultra-loud play-by-play of life. It's the 10th season of the Donut Box, and essentially, with Simone's promotion to the business department, the entire original Tim Hortons Field generation has graduated. Joel Figueroa is the only current cat who was on the Hamilton roster for that first season at the new stadium in 2014, and he even spent 5 years out west after that. That Tim Hortons generation didn't win any Grey Cups, but they went to four of them, usually made the playoffs, and were a memorable, personality-laced cohort of players and coaches. But life's clock never stops ticking, and it's now time for the 2024 Cats to make their own mark right away. In our next episode, we'll be talking with Scott Milanovich, which, of course, I'm really looking forward to. That's it for Ticats today. I'm Steve Milton, thanking you for listening, and I look forward to sharing a lot of time with all of you for the rest of the season.
This has been Ticats Today with Steve Milton. Catch it on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.